Now I have a machine gun.
Ho, ho, ho.
Hello, and welcome again. To take 127 on Ship Full of Bombs, Thames Delta, Thames. Oh man, I did it perfectly in the two previous takes.
Yeah, right.
Thames Delta Independent Radio, www.sfob.co.uk. My name is Dan, I'm the host. To my left, we have...
I'm Mark, and I'm doing the sliders and twiddling the knobs.
In front of me, we have...
I'm Jo, and I've lost the will to live now. I can't think of anything else to say.
To the right of me, we have...
Oh, I'm Mike, and I don't know what's happening.
No. Welcome. Welcome, dear listeners.
But Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Yay. This is the Christmas special.
If you could see what we were wearing, you'd laugh.
I love Mike's sort of fairy costume. It's really lovely.
Really lovely.
It's actually quite fetching. Yeah. It's, yeah.
I thought the open crotch was going a bit far.
Yeah, the nudity's a little bit too much.
It was a brave choice, but I think it's worked out. I think it's paid off.
I think I pulled it off. But
yes.
Less about that, the better.
Oh, my word. It's not going to be one of those shows, is it?
I have a very good imagination, you know, and I can't unthink about that now.
You can never unsee my
costume. Yes, no.
Crotchless fairy.
So, right, yes. So
moving on.
That's the intro, the show name, the web address, and the introductions of the people who are on it. So, the theme for this month is Christmas. Although it's kind of anti-Christmas, isn't it?
Boom.
Because we've chosen three movies that are set during the Christmas period, but you wouldn't automatically identify them as being Christmas movies, would you?
And I think we've done an excellent job, actually. Yes, if I say so ourselves, I think these three movies are the brilliant Christmas movies, and I think it's a job well done for once. Mm.
Absolutely agreed. Absolutely agreed.
Well,
yes.
Yes.
So, you know, without any further ado, shall we go straight into the first movie?
Yay!
Excellent.
Yay.
This is a movie from 1999. Over to you, Mike.
Well, my movie that I'm going to talk about for a little bit is a movie called Go. It was directed, if I found my notes, by Doug Liman, who made Swingers before this, which is a really good film. And later on, he made, like, Bourne Identity. So he's, a player, as they say. But this is an early film of his. It's set in a sort of rave culture. And it concerns these sort of shop workers, who are, like, working-class shop workers. And they sort of sit about chatting rubbish, like in a Tarantino-type movie. It's been called like Tarantino Light and stuff, and you know, there's something to that. But anyway, let me tell you what it's about, shall I? That would make a change for me, I guess. Yeah. But there you go.
Sorry, can I
it's
just.
It's Christmas after all, wasn't it?
Can I just interrupt you?
Shall I talk into the mic this time?
No, because I've just realised this is possibly the first show where you haven't been interrupted yet. You managed to speak for at least a minute straight.
And then you interrupted him.
Absolutely, just to point that out.
I'm turning over a new leaf.
Please carry on.
Right, I've lost my threads now, haven't I?
Yay! Ho, ho, ho.
Merry Christmas
ding,
to
ding,
me.
Ding,
ding. Oh, dear. Anyway, this girl works in a shop. It sounds good so far, doesn't it? I had a little thing on this, but Dan, you've derailed me. My train of thought. Chain or train, whichever.
Could we move it along a little bit?
Okay. She's got no money, she's going to get evicted. She swaps a shift with her colleague who wants to go to Vegas. So she picks up. It sounds really dull, doesn't it? It sounds like a dull movie if I tell you the plot.
I think you're choosing an interesting way to describe it, but
do
I mean.
You think so? Yeah. I don't think so. I'm boring myself with it. Anyway, a couple of guys come into the shop. And they say, where's the British guy who she's standing in for? And they want to buy some ecstasy. And she thinks to herself, here's a way to make some money here. And so I won't get evicted. I could pay the rent, won't get evicted. And so she enters a kind of underworld where she goes to a drug dealer to get these 20 pills of ecstasy to sell, to make some money, and she can live happily ever after. That's really in the first 5-10 minutes. It's not really a spoiler, but it's really what happens after she gets the pills and all the incidents, the swerves, the twists and turns. That's really what the film's about. Shall I go any further, or is that enough of the taster?
Don't you want to say that it's from three different narratives?
I think that's important.
That's not a synopsis, though, is it?
No.
To be fair, that's not a synopsis.
Well, I don't know. It is kind of
that is on page 2 of my notes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I haven't got there yet.
I would have said, okay, but then it's not my thing, so you're right. I'll just shut up.
Go on then, Mike. Anyway, go to page 2 of your notes where you explain that it's essentially a portmanteau film where there are three intertwined storylines going on at the same time.
Oi, give my notes back. That's why I wrote.
Sorry.
No, it's very fast-paced. It's basically, the first 30, 40 minutes are told from one perspective, and just where you think maybe getting dull, there's something happens which turns it on its head, and then you go into a separate storyline covering the same period of time, and then I do the same trick again. So it's really a movie told from three different viewpoints. They don't interweave that much.
There's little points, isn't there?
There's points where they interweave, but mainly three separate movies, but in the same period of time and the same characters. I realise that all sounds quite dull. It's a terrific movie, I think. It's a little gem. It's not a film I'd heard of, really. I certainly didn't see it at the time. It gets some amazing reviews if you look on
Rotten Tomatoes.
Rotten Tomatoes, that's it. Is it? Is it called Rotten Tomatoes?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, that's the one then. It's like 97% fresh or whatever. Okay. It's getting really good reviews. And it's a little gem. It's not a great movie, but it's a little gem. I'd be happy to say, do you know, this is more, I hate doing synopses because I can't be bothered really with the
movie. No, we noticed previous shows.
But I love this movie from the
That's not a revelation.
The first 30 seconds of the movie where they're the Columbia logo, and it kind of crackles and goes in and out of focus and splits apart, and then they whack some rave music on the top, and it's just, I loved it from 30 seconds in. Yeah. Very few movies get you on side that quickly.
Yeah,
and I think that's just amazing.
I'm going to turn to you, Joe, and ask you what you thought about Go.
Well, I saw Go when it came out because I was very much a 90s clubby girl anyway, so it was right up my street, I'll say. So I had great love for it, so I was really excited to watch it again. And actually, I was so surprised at how well it holds up and how often clubby films are so naff and so cringy. But Doug Liman's done it so well. And I think it's got such a good soundtrack and it's so exciting. And all those young actors are so Sarah Polley and Katie Holmes and the English guy, who I don't know who he is anymore. Everyone in it is so... they're so exciting and fresh, and I just think the way it's told from the three different stories is so... and Timothy Oliphant's brilliant as a dean. I just think it's a film... Do you know what? It was interesting watching it. I watched it. It's really knackered, put the kids to bed, and I just wanted to go out after I watched it. I said to Dave, we've got to watch this on a Friday night if we're stuck in. Because I just wanted to go out. It's so full of life, and it's so funny. It's just really still funny. And, you know, for a film that's, what, 25 years old?
Yeah.
27.
That makes me feel so.
Not 27. You were
17. I was just born.
17 years old.
For a film that's 112 years old.
When did it come out?
1999.
Thank God.
So that is
17. So I was
years.
Only five, but it was really good. I remember I used to go clubbing very young. No, I mean, so it really reminds me, it's right in my skill set of life. But even if it's not like that, I think it's such an energising film and it's so much fun. And for a Christmas film, I think it's definitely what you should watch Christmas Eve for a laugh. Yeah. Get on it. That's my opinion.
So that seems to be a fairly raving review.
Doug Liman's hugely underrated. He needs to make, I mean, he made Edge of Tomorrow, which I think is actually a good film.
Fantastic.
But, you know, I think he's a really interesting, versatile director, actually. There you go.
And as Mike said, The Bourne Identity, which, let's be honest, is still the best of the Bourne.
Well, that was
movies.
The first one, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And it was great.
Yeah.
So, Mark, what did you think of Go?
Like Joe, I watched this at the cinema when it came out, and when it, at that time, I absolutely loved it. I thought it was an amazing film. Bought it on, I had it on the video.
VHS, I was going to say, yeah. VHS.
And I watched it quite a lot of times at the time. And rewatching it again, I still really liked it. I thought the performances were great. Sarah Polley stood out for me. I thought she had that kind of world-weary sort of, the whole world's against me, everything I do turns to crap, whatever I do is going to go wrong. But she sort of wore this sort of like weight on her shoulders really, really well. The Desmond Askew character, who was Simon, the English guy, you didn't like him. I didn't like him as a character, but I think you're not really meant to.
He's a ginger English guy. Well, yeah, they cast him for a reason, didn't
yeah,
they?
He was a bit of a... I mean, he wasn't really explained what he was doing in the States, working in a... You know,
supermarket.
Yeah, a supermarket. And but that's beside the point. That's a plot point. I thought it... I didn't think it stood up as well as it could have done, possibly. But then I was never a raver, so the actual music... It's fine.
Fine.
I thought the soundtrack is amazing.
Fine.
I want to buy that soundtrack.
But it's not really my type of music. So I can listen to it for a while and then I get a bit bored of it. But as a whole, yeah, the three points of view I really worked. I thought the final chapter didn't work as well as the first two, possibly. Slight criticism because I think those two. You know, the two.
I like the direction it goes in the film because it's a bit mad. And a bit,
yeah.
I think it's quite a nice.
I think there are bits of it that I thought the incredulity, sort of the whole premise was a bit sort of daft and it got a bit sort of filmic, I suppose. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I thoroughly enjoyed myself watching it. I'm glad I saw it again.
Did I mention how hot Timothy Oliphant is, by the way? I just want to mention.
Well,
that.
I'm pitching myself for Sarah Polley here. I love Sarah Polley.
Okay. They were all fantastic. I really liked it. I've got to give kudos to William Fichtner.
Yes.
Who was the guy who in this he played the policeman who took the two guys back to meet his wife to go and have dinner.
Yes.
And he's been in so many movies. He's been in things like...
And then the wife used to be in Annie.
What's he been in? Oh, he's been in loads of things. The Dark Knight. So many things. And he was just fantastic
He is really good in it.
Great character.
Really
actor.
Sleazy and horrible. And
Salacious to the max.
Yeah, so many really great performances in it. I was a little bit concerned when you have that first story, as it were, and then it suddenly jumps back to the beginning of that first story but follows one of the other characters from the initial conversation. I thought, oh god, it's one of those films where we're going to have to live through exactly the same stuff three or four times, and it kind of wasn't, because once they split from that initial scene, they were three completely different stories until they kind of met up again at the other end. I thought it was brilliantly done. Absolutely fantastic. I'd never seen it before, except for this program. It was one of those where when I saw the DVD cover, when it came through in the post, I thought, I've seen this cover. It's one of those that I've seen in shops and I've walked straight past it because I thought, no, load of rubbish, not my thing at all. Totally wrong, because it was fantastic.
There was a couple of bits. I'm not trying to, it's 17 years old, but the Katie Holmes character, the bit at the nearer the end with the drug dealer, now the Timothy Oliphant character, I didn't get why she was doing that, and I didn't see there wasn't any sort of way into why she wanted to cop off with this bloke, and it's like, what?
She's been just out raving all night. She's a young girl and he's quite sexy, why not?
But had you ever been held hostage by someone and then
I definitely have,
and then you copped off of them later on?
That's a Thursday night.
Okay. I just found that a bit hard to believe personally.
A made up story.
I know that, but I do like to have a slight little bit of there's bits in films like that, and you think, well, that really wouldn't happen.
It does push the boundaries. Self-indulgent, but I didn't care.
None of that matters. So the vibe of it is so, I mean. It's so vibrant.
That's what I mean. I think you go, oh, all right, you guys, you kids. Yeah. You know, I think you have to be invested in it like that. I think otherwise, I suspect on a different night, I might have gone, oh, and got really angry. But I just fell in love with it all over again.
I think it's worth pointing out as well that you've mentioned kind of the club culture and all this kind of thing. I think with this film, it's more of a feeling. I think anybody that was involved in all the club culture will get the feel from this movie.
Were you ever Were you ever on one?
Absolutely not.
No, never. Really.
Absolutely not part of. I was not involved in club culture. But this film, for anybody out there who's a bit like me, a little bit worried, a little bit scared of watching it, it's not one of those where
we'll come round and hold your hand. Don't worry. It's not one of those. It'll be when you're sleeping. You won't expect it.
It isn't half set in the club. No. It's in a club for about 5 minutes. Yes.
And also,
the
club
middle.
Scenes aren't naff like they so often are.
No, they were. They were
still
well done.
Making you feel. It's still. I think they're really well done because that is notoriously hard to get right.
Yeah.
Because
it's
so normally excruciating.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Awful.
And
awful.
Can I add a trivia point that you might find interesting?
Are you sure?
Well,
it's a gamble. It's a Christmas gamble.
Okay. It's written by John August, who is a film writing guru. Okay. He does
write Big Fish?
I don't know. But who would have thought gurus would have been any good at writing scripts? Because they never are. They know all what to teach
techniques,
you. They can't do it. This guy does it. I'm going to get his books and it's johnaugust.com or something. If you people on phones looking him up. Thinking I'm an idiot.
John August, writer, Big Fish.
In fact, let's have a little look. Actually, I get those points.
So this guy.
I mean, he's a film writing guru.
Yeah, you're saying this guy, film writing guru, one of the best film writers ever. That's effectively what you said.
No. It's like Robert McKee hasn't written a thing, has he?
But
what's his name has. The one that wrote... sorry, this is a terrible segue. The one that wrote... Sundance and the thingy. William Goldberg. He's a scriptwriting guru and he wrote Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
William Goldman.
Yeah. God, can we move on?
No,
he
was a writer before he was a guru.
John August.
And you're thinking of Bill Goldberg's WWE wrestler.
John August, wrestling. Nice to go back segue. To that. Yeah. Go was his first full-length feature film script.
And what a one.
And then he wrote Titan A.E., Charlie's Angels.
Charlie's
Angels.
Charlie's Angels was all right.
First one was all right. Second
Big
one was
dreadful. Yeah, second one was awful.
Corpse Bride.
That was really good. Yeah.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Awful.
And then Frankenweenie, Dark Shadows.
Frankenweenie, my boyfriend works on everyone. Can we have a round of applause for him? Yeah.
Yeah, never seen it, actually. Never
You've not seen Frankenweenie?
No.
What?
Oh, it looks awful. No, just never seen it.
Back
never
to wrestling.
So there we are, yeah.
A fantastic film.
John August, marvellous.
Yeah, so
shall we have a little bit of music then?
Bit of rave. Time? A bit of rave.
No, it's not a bit of rave.
It is a bit of rave.
Oh, is it?
Turn it up. Turn that up to 11.
This particular tune.
Do a bit of spider
track. We're just going to double drop. See you in a minute.
Fire up the shoe saw.
Drop
Lion
the
bass. Rock.
Okay, well, the cheering is dying down now, and I think we have a new candidate, and we have a new favorite vegetable, which is asparagus. Let's go back to the station.
Take that booty.
Oh, can't we play any more of that?
And welcome back. Mike was just having a bit of a struggle with his headphones there, and for a brief terrifying moment he looked like the girl from The Ring.
That's all he's... Is that the Japanese one?
Oh, I could do that actually.
Yeah, that's it. That'll be next Halloween's costume. Fairy costume with ring hair.
Oh God, that's so upsetting. That image.
I had to remind you about it.
I know, please.
I'm sorry.
Now you've added
an extra
layer of terror.
Yeah. As if a crotchless fairy costume wasn't bad enough. So, right, okay. So we're going to go on to our next film now. You may be aware that all the films we do every month, they're always in chronological order of release. This one was really difficult because the first two films, Go and this one, were released 1 week apart in 1999. Extraordinary.
That's pretty extraordinary, actually.
Extraordinary. So, for this one, we're going over to Mark.
Right, yeah. Eyes Wide Shut, directed by Stanley Kubrick, his last film. He died before it was released, but obviously after he completed it. It's a film starring Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman, and it's about a guy called Bill Hartford, who's a doctor and obviously a very well-to-do. He's got lots of money, lives in a big fancy apartment in New York with his wife, and it seems to be that all is well when you first meet them. They're a sort of a loving couple, and you know they've got a young daughter, and then they go to a party, and Tom Cruise sort of like gets chatted up by these two young women, whilst Nicole Kidman is getting chatted up by some sort of sleazy old man, really. Anyway, it sort of awakens something in Alice, who is the Nicole Kidman character, and she can see that she's got a bit jealous. Anyway, they go back home, and the next evening they're lying in bed having a joint, and Alice just asked Tom Cruise if he'd had sex with the two girls, and he sort of denies, well, no, I haven't. You know, and he said he said she wonders if she asks him if he's ever jealous of the men that actually hit on her, and he goes, well, no, I'm not, no, because I love you and I know you love me, and you know, like that. And then it sort of leads into some kind of sort of weird argument. After that, they have a sort of a row and it's not really resolved. Then Bill goes out and he picks up a prostitute for some reasons I can't really fathom, to be quite honest with you, but he does. He doesn't have sex with her, but anyway. And then later on he goes to a club and he meets an old school friend, or an old university friend, who's a jazz pianist and hasn't seen him for years and years and years. And in the conversation they have, he discovers that this guy goes and plays pianos at some kind of weird sort of party that needs a password to get in. And Tom Cruise asked him, well, can I have the password and come along? And he said, well, I'm not really meant to give it to you, but okay, I'll give it to you. Anyway, Tom Cruise goes to this place and it's like full of loads of people wearing masks, having sex, basically. And really, then it sort of builds... problems with this, and it's does he want to carry on doing this kind of thing? And he sort of then he gets threatened by the people who run it not to talk about it and not to go anyway, and then it just goes on from there, really. I didn't like this film.
Can't tell.
Your
mask gets so
yeah. I've got a bit of a problem with, I'm not a huge fan of Kubrick. I mean, some of his stuff, I think The Shining is a great film. A lot of his stuff I found very misogynistic. I find it very I don't know. I just find it there's lots of things wrong. I found it very, I don't like, one thing that really annoyed me about this film was the lighting. I know it's a really mute point, but but the lighting really, really wound me up. That in the club, and in when they were in the bit where we were going to having the sex and all that, And I thought Tom Cruise was dreadful in it. Nicole Kidman was very good. I think she's a great actress, and I thought she was very good. And there are lots of other people. I think Sidney Pollack is in it. He's very good. But Cruise, when Cruise is trying to be dramatic and not mean and moody in an action film like he's been in Jack Reacher and Mission Impossible of late, which I think he's very good in, I just don't think he's got the gravitas for it. And I just was bored of this film. I found it not in the... It's meant to be an erotic... It's billed as an erotic drama. I don't think it is, actually.
But it was billed as that.
It's billed as that. You talk about it.
Was it billed as that, really?
Well, I don't...
It might be, but I'm...
They talk about an erotic drama based on a novella. But I just found it without any eroticism at all. I just... It was all right. I watched it when it came out of the cinema and I remember being disappointed. But this time, I've seen it again about 15 years ago.
Oh, Mark, you didn't entertain it, did
but,
you?
But I just found it really, really dull. I'm sorry.
That's all right, you're allowed.
He's allowed.
I'm wrong, obviously.
Very much so. Everybody's allowed their opinion.
Who wants to go next?
Me.
Joe, okay.
Yeah, just to get it over and done with, because I can see your legs jiggling, so I'm just doing it to wind you up. I'm going to take ages now to slag off Kubrick. No, I'm not going to slag it off, actually. I actually found it strangely alluring, this film. I was dreading watching it, not because of any... I actually really like Tom Cruise, and I have to disagree with you, because Tom Cruise in Magnolia is absolutely amazing. Yeah.
We did discuss this before, but my point with Tom Cruise in Magnolia was that Tom Cruise was playing a sort of a slightly unhinged leader of a cult, which is what he is.
Well, anyway, I actually really like Tom Cruise as an actor. I think he's gone a bit dodgy recently, but I think I was thinking watching this film, someone should give him a good part again. Anyway, I think both of them are excellent. And in fact, I miss Nicole Kidman in the middle part of the film when it's all about Tom Cruise. That's when my interest waned a little bit, because I think the film becomes a little self-indulgent. I know it's all about dreams and reality, and I get it. And I know that a lot of it was shot with plates and stuff like that, so you're supposed to feel there's a dreamlike quality, which your issue with the lighting perhaps is that...
Yeah.
Lots of stuff was done when I've read about it. Sometimes Tom Cruise was on a treadmill and there were plates projected. Okay. So there's a lot of stuff. He was trying to get a dream quality.
What plates?
So they projected onto it, and Tom Cruise was on a treadmill and they lit it from the side because it wasn't shot obviously in New York, it was shot in London. So that's a lot. So some of the stuff, they spent a week shooting with Tom Cruise on a treadmill with some projection. Okay. So apparently when you see him from the side, it's projected. Mm. You read about it, it's really interesting. There's so many interesting facts about this one. I did find it alluring. I actually found it really funny, like when he goes to the fancy dress shop. It's hilarious. I love Lily Sobrieski. I think she's bloody brilliant.
Yeah, but I thought that was really... I found that really sleazy. I didn't really...
Oh, no, I really like that. I found that really funny and great. I loved it. I mean, look, maybe I missed the point. I thought I would find the middle scenes erotic and maybe a bit sexy and, you know... I didn't, but maybe they've missed the point that they're not supposed to be sexy, which I know is what you two are going to say. But, I mean, ultimately, I don't think that he set out to make a misogynistic film, but ultimately I feel like you're presented with this really interesting character of Nicole Kidman, who confesses this wild night of sex she has, which sets Tom Cruise off on a self-indulgent, male, white, privileged, testosterone fantasy, and then you kind of lose Nicole Kidman, but actually she's the more interesting character.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that.
And she's the one who's not done anything untoward. He's gone off and gone completely off the rails just because she's talked about something. Anyway, so that's slightly
something
irritating.
Something that didn't happen.
Yeah. It's like that is all really interesting. I mean, ultimately, I think it's a really interesting film. I probably would like to watch it again. I think it's an interesting one to talk about. I think it just becomes a little self-indulgent when it's just... It's 2.5 hours long. I'm not saying... I don't know what you would cut out of it. I just think the stuff when it's just Tom Cruise going on this journey, I found a little bit... It lost my interest a little bit. But, you know, the end of it, I think, is hilarious. It's hilarious where the ending scene is set. There's so much about it that I think is funny and interesting. But I don't know. It's one of those films where I think there's a lot of layers to peel back. And I'm sure if I watch it again and again, there'll be stuff to learn. My interesting fact, before I stop talking, is that it holds the Guinness World Record for longest consecutive shooting days, of which there were 400. Yeah. Tom Cruise only signed on for 6 months. And there endeth my piece.
So you liked it, though?
I didn't say I didn't like it.
No, I'm not being sarcastic. You sounded like you liked it.
Yeah, I do. I think it's intriguing. I think it's flawed, but intriguing. Yeah. Definitely. And I think it's beautifully shot. And every shot, I would probably like to watch it still frame by frame and look at it. Because obviously, frame by frame, there'll be a reason for everything. So that will be interesting.
A lot of the lighting was actually practicals, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He didn't use lights.
Yeah.
He used what was you can see.
Yeah, like in the jazz club when they're there with those lights. And it's so jarring, those lights.
Yeah, and he
like
push processed. I don't really know what they mean, but you do
sounds good.
Do something fancy in the editing and like really...
I mean, you can see that it's a film that's been made by someone who is so much... thought in it, whether it irritated me at times and whether I was really sick at looking at perfect 32C tits, sure. But
are
you
allowed to say that, by the way?
What tits?
Yeah, she said it. Said it twice.
You said it twice, actually.
Yeah, we let that off. Yeah.
Boobies.
Boobies.
Can we go with the station approved shirt potatoes, please? Thank you.
That's the worst description. I'm trying to think of a horrible description of a penis now. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah. We didn't get any of those, though, did we?
No, disappointingly, although not disappointing, because men's bodies are disgusting. So I'd rather stick
with I think your fine mind's not.
Oh, I'd rather be seeing a load of shirt potatoes than a load of flippy flappy, whatever you want to call them.
Flippy flappy.
Dinkle, I think is the word.
Oh, a load of old, wrinkly grey, because they're all old and wrinkly, all the men, aren't they, apart from Tom Cruise. No one wants to see that.
Yet again, can we use the station-approved whistles, please? Just shirt potatoes and whistles.
I don't think probably Kubrick should be treated with a touch more reverence, but where we go down this path now.
Mike, can we? I never thought I would say this, but I'm just looking forward to hearing what you've got to say about this film, because I'm sick to death of all this madness we've just had from these two lunatics.
Excuse me, I'm coherent and charming.
Oh, you just say it, because I can't be either.
Please.
Chosen the two things that you're not.
Be the voice of
charming.
Common sense.
You're not
the voice of common sense.
The voice of common sense.
Yes.
I saw this film when it came out. I didn't much like it. I saw it again. I really think it's a great movie. I don't think it's one of Kubrick's best. I think Kubrick, for me, is one of my favourite directors ever. Second only, in my opinion, to Antonioni. And I think this film kind of meshes Kubrick and Antonioni's worlds. And I think it is anti-erotic, intentionally so. I think there's a load of flesh on view from the first image. Nicole Kidman drops her drawers, and you pretty much every scene you get flesh. And it there's nothing erotic about any of it, intentionally so. Joe's looking puzzled, but
well,
I think
see Nicole Kidman, it is erotic.
Yeah,
actually,
I think
she always looks. Yeah. I think, I don't know, I disagree. When you see her, I think it's erotic.
Well, perhaps that's just me then.
Well, can I just say, interestingly,
are a shirt potato is not the right size for you.
When you do see Nicole Kidman and she's naked, it's because she's doing things like getting dressed. So she's doing ordinary, everyday things, and there is a certain eroticism
and
to that.
She does wear white leotard to bed. Yes.
Yeah, and yet, in the scenes in the mansion where there's all of the rutting going on, and you know, so full penetrative sex happening and all of this, that's really kind of, because of the masks and all of the blank expressions, it's completely devoid of any eroticism. So strangely, it's the
but isn't there eroticism in anonymity? Isn't that why there's a glory hole and stuff like that?
I don't know what that means.
Back to you, Mike.
But if we
is it wrong to talk about the glory holes on a Christmas movie? Christmas special.
But like one of the first things you see,
it's a fair point. It is a fair point.
One of the first things Nicole Kidman does is, she's sitting on the toilet. She has a pee, and then she wipes what's the word we can use?
Frou-frou.
She wipes her foo-foos and toilet paper and flushes it.
She does what?
It's disgusting.
It's such an aesthetic.
But it's like, how can that be at all erotic? It's not. And that's one of the first things you see in the movie.
But but that is the everyday camp. Anyway, look, we're just talking about eroticism now, aren't we? So
well, and that's what the film was about, though.
Yes.
Definitely a talking point, isn't it?
Carry on, Mike.
But anyway, when I said about Antonioni being quite, you know, the voice of BBC Two. I think this film does what Antonioni does nearly all the film. It sets up a really interesting film and then just tosses it away and decides to not be that interesting. And I think it's just remarkable. Antonioni sets up mysteries and then just leaves them. I think Kubrick sets out for a bit of a horror movie. The soundtrack, he goes to this party where they're all having sex all over the place, and there's definitely an air of menace about it. And you think, oh, and the music like that. And it's just set up like a horror movie. The lighting looks like a horror movie. Everything looks like a horror movie. Hmm. And then it's like, tosses it away. It's like, not interested. It's about upper middle class people in like a state of ennui, which is a posh word for boredom. Mm-hmm. They're bored of their lives. They've got everything. They're having sex, but they're not fulfilled by it. Mm-hmm. They're not fulfilled by anything. And Tom Cruise has his like dark night of the soul, except it's not even a dark night of the soul. He goes wandering and it's like he's just a bit bored with everything. He thinks going to this party will just give him something in his life.
It's her that's bored, though, isn't it? I think he's quite happy until she has that revelation, and then suddenly he almost unravels. So I think he's all right. I think he's a bit bland, isn't he? And then she's the complex one. Yeah, she's the one smoking a fag while her daughter's eating Fruit Loops, you know, on the phone, like looking like glazed over. She's the one. I think
this is the thing. Let's not forget, because we get the hint, don't we, about her. We see what his life is like. He's a successful doctor who's rubbing shoulders with the, you know, the white elite. however, what does she do? She's at home
looking for a job
because she worked in an art gallery. She was managing. She tells the Hungarian guy she was managing an art gallery and it went bust.
Yeah, she's a bored housewife.
So she's probably in that kind of scenario where she's now having to try and prove herself again. It's just like, you know, it's gone bust. She needs to try and build herself up. And
or she had babies, so that's why she didn't, you know. No one being serious. She's raised her daughter, maybe that's why.
But it felt a little bit like maybe she was in a situation where she's licking her wounds a little bit and kind of trying to figure her place out.
She's lost.
Yeah. And then when they're having the kind of marijuana conversation, and Tom Cruise, Bill makes a flippant comment about her, about, well, of course this guy wants to speak to you, you're beautiful. And she's like, oh, so just because I'm beautiful, that's the only reason anyone would talk to me. It kind of hurts her. And I think that's what causes her to then tell him a few home truths about this particular night when they were at a hotel, they were on holiday, and she saw this guy, didn't she? She saw this guy in uniform. And he glanced at her and she could not move, and she realised that for one night of passion with that guy she would have given up everything, her husband, her child, everything, just for one night. And I've never seen somebody look so deflated. The character of Bill, played by Tom Cruise, she has just popped his perfect little bubble. He's got his wonderful job. He's got this big party that he's been invited to with all these important, powerful, rich people.
And he's a bit smug, isn't he?
And he is a little bit smug. And the thing is, this was based on a book called Trauma Novel, Arthur Schnitzler, which is basically, it translates roughly to Dream Story. And my take on it is that the dream that they talk about in Dream Story is the life that this guy Bill is leading. Yeah. He's living this lovely, he's in a bubble. Great job, all these people, the parties he goes to, this perfect wife, and then she pops that bubble by saying, no, actually, you're not in control of everything, and I've got thoughts, and I've got fantasies, and I've got secrets you don't know about. And to my mind, the rest of the film is him then kind of wandering around the city at night, encountering all these different people, this seedy underbelly, all of this stuff that exists outside of his perfect bubble, and he gets overwhelmed by it. So to me, the whole thing is like him having a bit of an existential breakdown because of what his wife has said to him, because she has said, effectively, you ain't all that.
She's got more going on. Yeah, I mean, I think Tom Cruise said he didn't like playing that character, and actually, this is really bloody nearly swore. Then sorry, this really is a really pathetic and annoying, that character, isn't it? I hated him actually. Now I look back on it, I want to punch him in the face.
He is a little bit pathetic, yes.
I think I'm a bit uptight because I haven't had a drink all week. But now I look back on it, I mean, I really like Tom Cruise as an actor. I think he's wonderful, and I think he played that part really well. I don't think he's wonderful in those stupid films he makes, but he has done stuff where I'm like, you really are good when you're given the right
I really liked him in it, but I thought the absolute crowning performance in it was Nicole Kidman. Yeah. And especially that scene where she's just sitting there slowly deflating his world.
And when she has that dream, she's laughing and then she's crying, and she has that dream and she talks about she's with all those men. I love that. I thought that was amazing.
Yeah, she's got just some of the best scenes in
the
movie.
She is an amazing actor, though. She's underrated. Yeah.
And I've got to say, I'm a big fan of Kubrick, and a lot of people hated this movie and were just like, oh, this isn't really a Kubrick movie. It's terrible. What an awful movie to go out on. You know, I personally think it may well be his best, if not in the top three, for me.
I think
I absolutely love it.
I think it's definitely one that will get better the more you watch it.
Yeah, beautiful to watch. Well, there we go. Do you know what? I've just realised we didn't do the voting on Go, did we?
No.
Did we not?
No. Should we quickly do the voting on Go now?
Yeah.
Feels like we've been talking for ages.
So, right, Go. Mark, yay or nay?
Yay, I recommend it.
Joe, yay or nay?
Two thumbs up.
Two yays.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah.
One thumb and a yay from me. Four yays for Go. Hurrah!
Woohoo!
Eyes wide shut. Mark?
I didn't like it, but I would recommend people watch it and form their own opinion, because it's a Kubrick film and I think it deserves watching.
A very diplomatic opinion, thank you. Joe?
Yep, I'll give it a thumbs
yay.
Up.
Mike?
Yeah. Not Kubrick's best, but good.
And a yeah from me as well.
Yeah.
So four yays. Yay. Four yays for Go and four yays for Eyes Wide Shut. Exciting times. Shall we have a little bit of music then? This is from Eyes Wide Shut. It's Chris Isaak. Remember him?
He's great, Chris Isaak.
Baby did a bad, bad thing.
Oh, yeah.
Song. We've had to cut it short, I'm afraid, because we're running out of time and we've still got one more movie to discuss. How exciting! This is a movie from 2001. Joe, over to you.
Yes, hello. We are going to now talk about a film called The Pledge, which is directed by Sean Penn. It was Sean Penn's third film that he directed, and starring Jack Nicholson as a policeman, detective?
But he's a policeman. Yes.
Just a policeman?
He's a man, and he works for the police.
A detective, let's say, who is. We open on his retirement party, and as he's accepting his watch and he's going to go off fishing to Mexico, the news comes in that the little girl's been murdered. So we kind of get the gist that Jerry is a man who perhaps isn't exactly looking forward to retirement. He doesn't seem to have a family, and there's some sort of internal turmoil going on. Anyway, so he goes along to the body to look at this little girl's body and becomes embroiled in the investigation. There's a great scene where he ends up telling the little girl's parents that she's been killed. There's this great scene. They run a turkey farm with just hundreds of turkeys, and it's the immensely, always brilliant Patricia Clarkson. Anyway, so Jerry ends up promising Jenny's mother, played by Patricia Clarkson, on a crucifix that he will find her daughter's killer. And that is where the titular pledge is made and where Jerry's obsession maybe begins. So an Indian man, Benicio del Toro, amazing.
He was brilliant.
Cast in this film is unbelievable. He's accused by the crime and something happens. And it's obviously a dodgy confession and Jerry's never convinced. And so Jerry begins, he does go off fishing for a while, but then he comes back and he starts to become, oh no, sorry, he becomes... leading his own investigation into it and becomes a little obsessed, should one say. Tries to get the case reopened, no one cares. So then he goes off fishing.
Sorry, can I just, because it should be pointed out at this time, he's now retired.
Oh yeah,
he's effectively
retired.
A civilian.
Yeah, so they just think he's maybe losing his marbles slightly or got too much time on his hands. So no one's taking him seriously, even though he has discovered that there are other cases of little girls looking very similar in red coats going missing. No one wants to listen to him. So eventually even he gives up on this theory until he has an encounter with a local mum who's being abused by her ex-partner, physically abused, played by Robin Wright, and she's got a little blonde girl, and obviously this opens up everything again for Jerry. And I will not say any more, suffice to say that the ending is probably the most heartbreaking ending of a film I've seen ever, and I couldn't even bring myself to watch it, and I've seen this film many times. So there you go, that's the synopsis. I say about this film, I don't know, I think it's such a bold word to say, I think it's almost like a little mini masterpiece. I just love this film so much. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. The cinematographer is a guy called Chris Menges, and there was just beautiful shot after beautiful shot. I mean, it's Monash, I don't know where Monash County is, sorry, do you know where it is? It's a part of the world.
No,
it's like,
really.
Anyway, snowy America. It's set in snowy America. And there's just all these just breathtakingly beautiful shots, and the colour palette's wonderful. I mean, and I just cannot, the obviously Sean Penn directing and Jack Nicholson starring would have been a very alluring prospect, because the cast members, it's Helen Mirren, Vanessa Redgrave, Tom Noonan, Mickey Rourke, Sam Shepard, Benicio del Toro, Harry Dean Stanton, Aaron Eckhart, Patricia Clarkson, it's just such an extraordinary cast, and not one of them is wasted. The script is absolutely perfect. It's just such a beautiful, amazing, affecting, heartbreaking film that I just, when I saw it the first time, I went to see it, funnily enough, it's quite a funny story, I went to see it at the cinema, in the cinema with my best friend, and a crucial part of the film, one of the reels dropped out, and they just put the lights on and started playing rave music, and of all the films for this to happen on, we were just like, what? Anyway, so I hope that doesn't happen to you when you see it, you'll probably never see it in the cinema, but what I will say is, so I saw it when it came out, and was really affected by it then, and I've probably seen it 4 or 5 times, and just watching it yesterday on my phone, I was really moved by it. No, I did have to watch it on my phone, but it still is brilliant. Don't watch it on your phone. So there you go. I think Sean Penn is very clever, a brilliant director, and it's one of Jack Nicholson's, I think, best performances. I don't know why he didn't win an Oscar or get nominated.
No.
I bet you it was overlooked, this film.
Yeah. I tell you, I'm going to jump in there. You saying about Jack Nicholson's performance, I think it probably is his finest performance.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And he doesn't do his normal Jack Nicholson-y things, does he? It's a very underplayed, understated performance, and wonderful. Just such a great, great film.
It's heartbreaking.
That's probably all I really need to say about it, personally. It is a great film. Go and watch it. so good.
Yeah,
and heartbreaking. When you mentioned about the ending, I literally got goosebumps just thinking about it.
But there's so many amazing scenes. Like, there's a scene where, sorry, I know other people need to talk. The scene where, just Jack Nicholson and Vanessa Redgrave, that's a great scene. The scene when he's with Helen Mirren. The scene when he's with Patricia Clarkson. So many great female characters. It's just not one scene where you're like, well, actually, apart from that bit, that was a bit dodgy. It's faultless.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to come to you this time, I think, Mike. Yeah, Mike.
Of your list of great people, I think you missed Sam Shepard.
I think you mentioned him.
Oh, good.
Did you? Because he's great as well. They're all great. And I haven't actually got much to add. I agree with everything you said, which is the first time. And
Merry Christmas.
I've seen it 3 or 4 times, I guess. I hadn't seen it for a while, so when I saw it again this time, it affected me as if I'd not seen it before. And it's because once you've seen it, you know how it ends, which we're not going to say because it's just so unlike any other thing you've ever seen, really. So we're not going to say what that is. But because you know that's coming, scenes with, like, Jack Nicholson reading a bedtime story to the little girl are unbearably heartbreaking to watch, knowing how Jack Nicholson and that family unit is going to end up. It's just a wonderful, wonderful film. So, what's to add, really, to what you two said? It's just, go see it.
Wow. Okay. So, Mark, surely to heaven, oh, no, you must no. have, you
I'm
must
literally,
have
gonna, I'm going to come over there, honestly.
I agree with everything you've said, apart from a couple of bits. I thought, brilliantly directed, brilliantly acted. Me and Dan were talking beforehand about Nicholson not being doing his Nicholson mugging, which I don't like Jack Nicholson as an actor particularly, because he does all that face pulling stuff, and I find it very mannered, and he's brilliant in this because he's so underplayed. Benicio del Toro is incredible, absolutely brilliant in it. Robin Wright is amazing in it, and all these little vignettes and all these little cameos from all these great actors like Patricia Clarkson, she was heartbreakingly brilliant. It's beautiful cinematography, I think looked really great, but there are two major flaws.
Don't give away the ending.
I know, alright, okay. There's a bit near the end, okay, and it's difficult. I'll try to say there's a bit at the end where he is not being believed by his ex-colleagues, or they don't want anything to do with him.
Yeah.
But at the end they all turn up. Now why does that happen? I don't get why they all suddenly turned up.
There's quite a lot of evidence, doesn't he?
No, but they were just all suddenly there, and I didn't really. And all the way through the film, you got people like Sam Shepard and particularly Aaron Eckhart who's saying, "Well, just go away. We don't want to know. It's finished. It's closed. This case." And then all of a sudden, oh, where's Aaron Eckhart with all his mates with guns? Didn't get that bit.
I didn't.
And I also,
It would be difficult to justify it without giving away plot points.
Yeah,
think it's absolutely justified.
Okay. We could discuss it.
Yeah.
And the other point, I really didn't get his sort of descent into madness either. I didn't see that. It didn't. There wasn't any pointness to that. And
it's
just
hinted at, though. It's hinted at. There's a bit when he's even first trying to get them to reopen the case. You can see his mind's going a little bit. It's a bit.
His mannerisms.
When he's with Helen Mirren, he's got. She's asking him all those questions. You can see he's losing his mind slightly.
And he's getting a name of girls wrong.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
There's one called Jessica. One's called Jenny,
and he gets it wrong. His mind is going.
I didn't really.
It's the destructive power of obsession, isn't it?
It's a
man who spent his entire career thinking, investigating, digging things up, finding things out, and all of a sudden it's like, well, thanks ever so much for that, off you go and do some fishing.
And there's a great line when Patricia Clarkson says to him, how can there can't be such devils, and he says there are such devils, but I think he's talking about his own demons as well at that point. I say
all the things that you said about the way it was made and everything I agree with entirely, but there's those two points and I just that just spoiled it for me, and I just didn't get why were they there. It just didn't make any sense why they would suddenly all this SWAT team or whatever would turn up when all the way throughout the film they've been telling him to go away, and then all of a sudden it's like next scene. Oh, if there'd been an extra scene maybe with and that's my only point, and I was at the end of it, I was actually quite disappointed with the film because of that. Because I thought it was a major flaw. Having said that, it's a very well made film. You can't deny how good and how talented Sean Penn is as a director. He's a genius, and he should be making more films because he is that good.
Yeah.
It's far better. He made Into the Wild, didn't he? That was his last film, wasn't it? Into the Wild.
I think so. I think it was his last film.
Was that the one with
Emile Hirsch?
That's the guy, isn't it?
Into the Wild.
Christopher McCandless, wasn't it?
And Dodgy Berries.
Yes.
What's the other film I've seen a Sean Penn film recently that he directed? I can't remember what it was. Anyway.
He did the Indian Runner, that
The Crossing Guard.
Oh yeah.
Hang on, I'm gonna look up Sean Penn.
That's it. There's four. But,
do you know? Yeah, can I just make special reference to, or reference even, Mickey Rourke? Yes. He's got about a minute of screen time, and he portrays the position he's in with so much emotion, it's almost unbearable to watch without crying. He's on screen maybe a minute.
And that wasn't at the time when no one would hire him. I was thinking about it, because remember when there was a time when he went completely off the rails, and because obviously Sean Penn is an actor, I was thinking, oh, I bet you he gave him, do you know what I mean? It's like, it was interesting. I was thinking, gosh, it was at the, you know, it was only it took the wrestler, didn't it, to bring him back.
Yeah,
I think you're right. This is a
it's
film
an impeccable cast.
Full of cameo appearances, all of them absolutely amazing. So can we have a vote then very quickly on this film? Mark, yay or nay?
I would say I would give it a yes, but
that's a yes,
but with reservations.
That's a yes.
Maybe
Joe?
You should watch it again.
Oh, well, I've got it.
Yes, hell yes.
Mike.
Oh, it's a wonderful film.
And a definite yay from me. It's extraordinary. I honestly think it might be in my top 10 films of all time.
It's definitely in mine.
Beautiful, beautiful film.
But it always has been.
You know what this means, don't you? It's that magical time, Christmas, and we've got three films that have all won.
Yeah.
We're recommending.
The Pledge has won the most.
I think Joe read the most, because we all
know.
Like,
I think The Pledge.
Because really, like, saying it's a masterpiece beats, it was all right.
Yeah. I loved Go.
But I don't think it's a masterpiece.
I loved Go. Eyes Wide Shut, fantastic.
We're just going to have a small
Pledge,
fight.
The Pledge is something else.
Yeah.
Everybody
needs
to see
it. I want
to
go home and watch it again now.
Yeah, I do.
On my phone.
You know what? We're nearly out of time. So very, very quickly then, can we just say goodbye? Goodbye from Mark.
Thank you
goodbye.
For listening.
Goodbye from Joe.
It's been a pleasure.
Goodbye from
hope
Mike.
It's been a pleasure.
Goodbye. Happy Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Everybody. Here's a little bit of music from Orchestra Malabenta Star de Mozambique, and it's Nwahulwana. I'm